Yes, yes, I am aware that I have glory rays coming down from my lamp. If you're watching on the laundry cam today, yes, that's been pointed out to me that if I angle the lamp at a certain way, then these glory rays come down from here. And I want that. I like it. I think it's suitable to the occasion. Yes, the phone cord is back. I thought about having it out of the frame, but things seemed a little empty without it. I don't want it to compete with Judy, and yet I feel it is competing with Judy today, this angle of it. I'm going to get rid of it today. So there goes the phone cord. Good morning, everyone. This is Martin Zender, and in the Revelation series, we are still in the book of Revelation, and yet we are looking at King Solomon. Why am I doing this? Because I want you to avoid the snare, the trap of falling in line with the world and becoming popular in the world, because the world is about to be swept away in the hugest movement of popularity you have ever seen. And it's going to be called, ironically enough, unlikely enough, a wild beast. But remember, John is seeing a wild beast, but it's not wild as it appears on the earth. It is very beautiful. It is the ultimate form of government. It is the ultimate form of religion. And everybody's singing kumbaya. Everybody's strumming guitars and singing together. It's Woodstock on steroids. And it's completely acceptable to everyone except those who are called out. And only the elect will be able to detect the falseness of it, because it's going to be so deceptive. Back to the assembler. I'm coming to the end of the first chapter of Ecclesiastes. This is just a brief sidetrack, but I think it's a worthy one, or else I wouldn't be doing it. So we had just had the assembler. King Solomon calls himself the assembler because he grasps wisdom from the four corners of his mind. I think his own mind. He's not getting wisdom from the four corners of the earth. The Queen of Sheba did come to him, that's true. He might have gotten some wisdom from her, but I doubt it. I think that he got presents from her. She brought him all kinds of things. I think she brought him some apes. As I recall, he got what? You think it was grapes, not apes? No. I think she brought him grapes and apes. That's where the confusion may lie there. But I think she learned more from him. He didn't learn anything from her. She came away saying, I heard about your kingdom. I heard how great it was. But people, as much as they tried to exaggerate it, they only told me the half of it. So here's Mr. Wonderful saying that he applied his heart, verse 13, to inquiring and exploring by wisdom concerning all that is done under the heavens. That's a euphemism for saying, I collected the most beautiful women in the entire planet. I got gold everything, man. I got a gold-plated toothbrush, and this is my conclusion, that it is an experience of evil Elohim has given to the sons of humanity to humble them by it. Now, verse 14. I saw all the deeds that are done under the sun, and behold, the whole is vanity and a grazing on wind. All the deeds. So not only the deeds of his kingdom, but the Queen of Sheba did, I think, elucidate Solomon, and so did other personages, great personages who came from other parts of the world, because Solomon didn't have the, quote, benefit, unquote, of CNN, of worldwide news, of the eye in the sky that could scan the globe and bring him every evil and every good on the planet. But he heard things from all these potentates that came from the four winds. And they all told him, yeah, same here, grazing after the wind. What's it like in your kingdom? Psh, grazing after the wind, sun comes up, sun goes down, water goes here, water goes there, the wind, whew, 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 it keeps coming back to the same place. Solomon goes, yeah, okay. Status quo. I saw all the deeds that are done under the sun, and behold, the whole is vanity and grazing on wind. What is distorted cannot be set in order, and what is lacking cannot be counted. Oh, what is distorted cannot be set in order. And you notice, I am not trying to set in order everything that I think is distorted. You and I, we see that the religions are so distorted, the truth is so distorted, and we try to set it in order, but we can't, because what God has broken and twisted, it's going to remain broken and twisted to the end. But this is what we can do. We can throw light into the darkness. It's not going to change the darkness into light. That's the key. Because what is distorted cannot be set in order. And you will save yourself a lot of trial, trauma, and the burning of calories. Well, you might not want to save yourself burning of calories, those of you who are overweight. But what I'm saying is you will spare yourself a nervous breakdown, perhaps, by trying to undistort that which cannot be undistorted, to set in order. And I've often told you, you cannot go into the churches and hope to change those people. You can't hope to go into the government and hope to create a nirvana, because what is distorted cannot be set in order. But you can be a light. You can be a witness. But you're not going to change them. If one or two do change, that's a wonderful blessing. And it does happen. It does happen. But the major part of it that is distorted, the major part of the wild beast that is now being created by these various means of secret conclaves, or not so secret conclaves, of people in power who have the money, you're not going to change them. It's going to keep going on. People like Glenn Beck think that Christians are going to become wonderful people and change the tenor, the color, the hue of the world. They're going to undo the distortion. That's not going to happen. Is somebody mowing the grass out here? Hang on a second. I gotta fix this. I have a window open. But somebody has the audacity to mow their grass at this hour? You're kidding me. Hang on. You see? There's an object lesson for you. I couldn't undistort that. I couldn't set it in order, but I could muffle. I could close the dang window. Okay, on here. And what is lacking cannot be counted. I'm not sure I understand that. But I'm not saying I have to at this time. Maybe I do. What is lacking cannot be counted. All right, I'll think about that and get back with you. I spoke with my heart, saying, behold, I have grown great and have added in wisdom over all who were over Jerusalem before me. My heart has seen much of wisdom and knowledge. Then I applied my heart to know wisdom, as well as to know about raving and frivolity. What a great job. Not only did he get to know about wisdom, which are the things of God and of the Spirit, but God gave him the grace and the blessing, I guess you could say, to know of... I have a halo over my head? I seem to have like a rainbow. What's this? This is like a rainbow. Am I seeing this right? I'm looking at the laundry cam here. There seems to be a rainbow right here, unless I'm mistaken. Has that been there before? It's like on my head. Oh, I have the Spirit of God upon me. No, it's not. It's just a natural manifestation of the light. But this is interesting. It's the fact that he came to know raving and frivolity as well, because he had to conduct experiments in it. God said to Solomon, I'm going to conduct a vast demonstration with you. To you, it'll seem like an experiment. To me, it's not. To the world, it's a demonstration. Zender is going to talk about this in 2016 in the Revelation series, in the last few years of the eon, last few minutes of the eon for the body of Christ. And I need you to know about wisdom. You asked for it. That was great. Remember that, Solomon? I asked you what you wanted, and I said, I'll give you anything in the world that you want, and you asked for wisdom. It's a good thing you didn't ask for concubines, because if you had asked for concubines, I would have given you the concubines, but I would not have given you anything else. Nope. No apes from the Queen of Sheba, no grapes, no wisdom either. But you asked for wisdom, therefore I give you grapes, apes, and concubines. And I want you to conduct experiments in frivolity. So I'm going to give you every brand of liquor and alcohol and raving as well. So I'm going to give you musicians we think we invented electronica. We think we invented electronic music, and we think we invented all this synthesizer stuff. No. And thus these raves on these dance floors where people are headbanging. Oh, this is a great new thing. It's the new wave. Wow, aren't we a clever generation? There's nothing new under the sun. Is there anything that exists of which you can say, hey, this is a new thing? No, there isn't. And Solomon is proving that here again by saying he conducted experiments in raving. And so I think that he had great bands that had timbrels and bongos and... tambourines, and Desi Arnaz had nothing on the bands of Solomon. Oh, we think we invented new genres of music. Oh, we invented rap. Oh, the first rap song was Blondie, her song Rapture. be my prayer to everybody there. Be not van the sack of my mind. Now flashes fast, flashes cool. Francois said, passe, non de boo. I said, don't stop. No, Blondie, you did not invent that. Because Solomon had people doing that 4,000 years ago. Here come the queen of Sheba now. She's rocking on her boat. She's coming in your moat. And she's going to find out that you're the best. She's going to find out that the rest are terrible. They did it exactly like that. Solomon had it all. And he knew about it. And he realized that even this, even the rap of those who came on the boat with the queen of Sheba was grazing on the wind. For in much wisdom, oh wow, I realized that even this, it is grazing on wind. Yeah, verse 18. I can't believe what I'm seeing in verse 18. All right, do I have time for this? Yes, I do. Listen to this, verse 18. For in much wisdom is much vexation. I don't know how many times people have suggested to me and said to me that this wisdom that we have, this knowledge that we have of the truths of God, we know, for instance, that God is behind everything. And while you think that this is a great thing, and it is, it can be a vexation also. It can be a trial to know what we know, to know where the world is going, to know you're on the Titanic. Can you imagine boarding the Titanic, knowing what's going to happen to the Titanic? That's vexation, but that's wisdom, isn't it? That's wisdom to know what's going to happen to the Titanic. But with wisdom, according to Solomon, with wisdom is much vexation, and he who adds knowledge adds pain. This is the last verse of chapter 1, verse 18. Going to start chapter 2 tomorrow, but I'm going to end with this. Verse 18, I'm going to read it again. For in much wisdom is much vexation, and he who adds knowledge adds pain. And that is true. Now, maybe Solomon is talking about the wisdom that is added by his own efforts. Maybe he went to the library and got books on botany, got books on anatomy and physiology, had some muskrats dissected for his general knowledge. I don't know, but maybe he got some astronomers on board and he was studying the rings of Saturn with a... Is Saturn the one with the rings? Good. For all I know, they had glasses, they had telescopes then, who knows. So maybe this is the wisdom he's talking about, the wisdom that he attained. But no, because that would be, now that I'm thinking about it, that would be a gaining of knowledge about his environment, his surroundings, the planet he was on. So I think that would be part of the wisdom given to him by God when he asked for it. So I'm going to stay with this, that even the wisdom given to him by God, even the wisdom we've been given by God, is a cause of pain and vexation. It's a burden now. I think this is the whole point of the whole thing, is that this wisdom and is even a burden now. Even the knowledge that we have of God in Christ and what we're coming into, and we know the secrets of the eon. But even that is a burden while we yet wear bodies of flesh and blood. It's a burden. It won't be a burden when we're delivered from mortality and when we're changed. Then it won't be a burden. Then this wisdom and knowledge that really wears us down, then it will be, oh, thank God for that. But right now, it's hard to bear it in these vessels of clay. In fact, sometimes these vessels of clay strain to contain the light, to contain the knowledge that is in us. It's not boasting, it's just a fact. And I think that maybe this was the problem with Solomon, is that he was bearing all of these gifts from God, bearing them in his mortal flesh. And that was part of the problem. So there's a dual application of the wisdom here, I think. It's the fact that no matter what you get in this life, and even what wisdom you attain, you're never going to be absolutely happy, because this life, this eon, this cosmos, this arrangement, this system is designed by God for now to be one of vanity. Vanity doesn't mean you look in the mirror and fluff up your hair. Vanity is uselessness. It's like vain. You did it in vain. You did it for nothing. You did it for nothing here. You did it for nothing here. Sometimes we work, and we don't often see fruit from our labors. Well, sometimes we do, some of the times we don't. Solomon says this is a vanity, but this is not to say that every experience you have, every joy and every disappointment is collected, is saved, is remembered by God, and you will be recompensed, you will be compensated in the coming eon for everything that has happened here. And as I've told you, you are being groomed right now in this boot camp specifically for the task God has for you in the coming eon. Even though all is vanity, nothing is wasted.